All right, good evening, everyone. Let's begin. One second. All right, good evening. So this week we're going to focus a little bit on Parshas Chukas. And I want to draw your attention to probably the most famous episode in the entire Parsha. Begin with number one. The Jewish people come to Midbar Tzin on the first month. So first event, death of Miriam. The Torah then goes on. As a result, so again, interesting enough, the Gemara notes the juxtaposition between the death of Miriam and the sudden lack of water. So the Gemara understands that because the well itself, the Gemara says, was in the merit of Miriam, and therefore Miriam dies, the well that accompanied them disappeared. This, of course, creates an incredible and understandable immediate panic, and the Jewish people begin to approach Moshe and Aaron. Vayarav ha'ami Moshe, vayomru le'mor, v'lu gavanu b'gva achinu lefnei Hashem. And the people, again, interestingly enough, one of the ongoing struggles that we've already begin to see with the Jewish people is just the inability to deal with stressful situations in a calm, collected, and thoughtful manner. Very often, their gripes are legitimate. Like, for example, in this case, when they don't have water, that's actually a good reason to panic. Remember, there are 3.5 million people in the middle of the desert. There's no water source. That is cause for extreme panic. But of course, as we all know, the true test of our emotional, spiritual, personality metal is how we deal with stressful situations. Like the Gemara says, there are three ways that you see the true nature of a person: bekoso, bekiso, ubekaaso. Right? What happens to a person when they drink a little bit? How does a person spend their money? And what happens when a person gets upset? And getting upset is not just the idea of anger. What it means, kaaso, means how does a person deal with stressful situations? The real me comes out in situations of duress and stress. So the people pounce on Moshe. They say, we should have just died with everyone who died already. But lama haveisim eskal Hashem el amidbar hazeh lomos. Why did you bring us to this desert to die? Sham anachnu b'yireinu. You brought us all here. This is a suicide mission. We're going to die here in the desert. But lama ha'elisunu mimitzrayim lahavi osana el amakom hara hazeh lo mekom zera uteina v'gefen v'rimon umayim ein lishtos. So, you know, amazingly enough, you know how there are some people where when you get into an argument with them, so they'll always bring up past history. Right? Do you remember 5 years ago when you did this, or 10 years? So it's interesting, the Jewish people do that. Every single time there's some type of issue, what happens? It always comes back to, why did you take us out of Egypt? What does Egypt have to do with any of this over here? We need water, we understand, but it always lapses back to that, which the psychologists in the audience will shed a little bit more light on this, but this has to do with unresolved conflict, right? Remember, there's a piece of the Jewish people that is not totally reconciled with the concept of being free, not really ready to assume the responsibility for being free. So every single time the limits of their autonomy, their personal freedom are tested, every single time they have to take responsibility for a circumstance, they just immediately crumble. So what happens? Vayavo Moshe v'arom ne'akala pesach v'amoid v'yiplu al panem v'yira kvod Hashem aleim. So amazingly enough, whereas contrast this with last week's parsha. Whereas in last week's parsha, when Korach goes ahead and confronts Moshe Rabbeinu with a challenge to his authority, Moshe Rabbeinu responds. Interestingly enough, over here, Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't respond. Instead, what does he do? He falls on his face. The Mefarshim and the commentaries point out that when Moshe Rabbeinu falls on his face, it's almost like, if you could imagine, his legs give out from under him. Moshe Rabbeinu is so done. He's so incredibly well done with everything that's happened that he no longer even has the ability to respond. Number two, Va'idaber Shel Moshe Lemar, Kaches Hamata, take your staff, Vahakela Sa'ida Ata V'Aron Achicha. So gather, take your staff, gather the people, you and Aaron, V'dibartem Ela Sela Le'inehem. And I want you to speak to the rock, command the rock to give forth water, and do this in front of the entire assembled Jewish people. V'nasan meimav, the rock will give forth its water. V'hotzei salahem mayim min ha-sela, you will bring forth water from the rock. V'hishkisa esha'eda ve'esbiram, not just a little bit of water, but enough water to go ahead and take care of the people as well as their flocks. Number three. V'yikach Moshe eshamatim lefnei Hashem kasher tzivo. So Moshe Rabbeinu takes the staff, comes before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'yakilu Moshe va'aron eshakal al pnei ha-sela. Hasala. So Moshe and Aaron gather the people in the presence of the rock. And what happens? Vayomer lahem, Shimuna Amorim. Moshe Rabbeinu tells them, listen, you rebellious ones. Hamin hasela hazeh notzi lachamayim. We are going to bring forth water for you from this rock. Vayore Moshe es yado, vayach es hasela b'mateo pa'amayim. Moshe Rabbeinu raises his hand, hits the rock twice with his staff. Vayetsu mayim rabim, a great abundant amount of water begins to flow. Vatesh ta'eda ubi'iram, and the people are taken care of, the people are watered, and so are their flock. Number four. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe ve'al Aaron. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe and Aaron, Ya'an lo he'emantem bi, lahakdisheni le'enei b'nei Yisrael. So now, here's what we know, is that Moshe did not follow instructions. That's what we know. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to go ahead and speak to the rock. He has now hit the rock not once, not twice. He's in violation of the divine command. HaKadosh Baruch Hu therefore says, we're going to translate the words for now, and then we'll try to understand them deeper a little bit later. Ya'im lohe emantem bi, because you did not believe in me, lahakdisheni le'enei b'nei Yisrael, to sanctify me in the eyes of the Jewish people, therefore lachem, therefore lo saviu esakal hazeh el haaret asher nasati lahem. So because you did not believe in me, in order to sanctify me in the eyes of the people, therefore you will not bring this congregation, this nation, into the land that I've given them. And therefore the Torah ends the story by saying, Hema me meriva. This place was called the waters of Meriv, which means the waters of contention. Asher Ravu b'nei Yisrael es Hashem. Because it is here that the Jewish people did battle with God. Vayikadesh bam. And they were, and he was sanctified through them. See, here's what we get from this story. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives Moshe Rabbeinu instructions. Moshe Rabbeinu violates the instructions. And the repercussions of the violation, the repercussions of his non-compliance with the instructions of God are swift and severe. Moshe Rabbeinu will not go into Eretz Yisrael. And again, remember, we fast forward. There's no appeal. There's no second chances. There's no do-overs. Everyone else gets a different shir now for tonight. Everyone else gets to do tshuva and gets to change their circumstances except for Moshe Rabbeinu. The Jewish people can build the golden calf, there's tshuva. The Jewish people can send the rakam, there's tshuva. For Moshe Rabbeinu, again, not our topic for tonight, there's no tshuva, there's no ability to rectify this sin. Apparently it's too severe to be remedied, and Moshe Rabbeinu is stuck with the circumstances.
Well, I mean, why did Hashem have to die to take this
step? Oh, okay. So that's an excellent question, which means it seems almost like a little bit of a setup. If the staff wasn't necessary, then why tell Moshe to bring it? It's like putting a stumbling block in front of someone. Meaning, had Moshe not had this, and remember, clearly the staff is not part of the story. That's another shear also, right? So the answer is because the simple answer, Kadosh Baruch Hu was trying to create a contrast between the staff represented brute force versus he was asking Moshe Rabbeinu to go ahead and use dibur. Dibur represents the idea of nature complying with the will of God voluntarily. But we'll save that for a different year. What I'd like to really focus on tonight is what exactly did Moshe Rabbeinu do wrong? Meaning, obviously, he hit the rock instead of speaking to the rock. That we understand. He did not comply with what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. But obviously, for the repercussions to be so severe and so irrevocable, there must be something deeper that is unfolding over here. This just can't be, because remember, you know, we've spoken about in the past that, if you remember, again, we actually spoke about this on Purim time. Rav Soloveitchik, in one of his essays, contrasted Moshe Rabbeinu with, let's say, Mordechai. And it's not just Mordechai, it's other Jewish heroes and heroines as well. And if you remember, again, the contrast the Rav made was, if there's one thing that marks Moshe Rabbeinu's tenure as leader of the Jewish people, it's that everything he did was scripted. Everything was scripted. God tells Moshe what to do, how to do it, when to do it. And interestingly enough, it's dafka those times when Moshe Rabbeinu breaks from the script that Moshe Rabbeinu tends to get into a little bit of trouble. So now we see, yes, Moshe Rabbeinu broke with the script. He hit the rock instead of speaking to it. We understand that. But for there to be, I will tell you, just to bare my soul for a moment here, I struggle very much with this episode because I see Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe Rabbeinu is a man who gave up everything. Moshe Rabbeinu gave up everything. Jewish leadership always requires giving up some trapping of normal life, but Moshe Rabbeinu, this is a different parsha already. Moshe Rabbeinu gave up his wife. Moshe Rabbeinu gave up his children. Moshe Rabbeinu gave up his privacy. Moshe Rabbeinu gave up everything that's normal about existence. And for one reason and one reason only, to benefit Klal Yisrael. And he only wanted one thing. Throughout the 40 years that he led the Jewish people, he only wanted one thing, and that was to go into Eretz Yisrael. That's all he wanted. And so I find it difficult to understand what it is. Okay, we know he disobeyed. We're not trying to say he didn't disobey. We know that he didn't follow directions. We understand that. But what is so severe in the disobedience of Moshe Rabbeinu that would warrant this reaction from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So, what I'd like to try to share with you tonight are four different approaches in understanding the sin or the mistake of Moshe Rabbeinu and in trying to understand what it was that Moshe Rabbeinu did, again, aside from just simply hitting the rock, trying to understand why HaKadosh Baruch Hu dealt with him in such a swift and severe fashion. So let's begin with number five, our first approach for tonight. So the Ramban quotes the Rambam. So in 5 Aleph, the Rambam writes, V'harav Rabbi Moshe, that's the Rambam. Savar bo svar. So what did the Rambam say? V'amar, ki Moshe Rabbeinu alav shalom chet ohu, shenoto. Actually, you know what we're going to do? I'm looking at the wrong sheet. I apologize. Number 5, Aleph, versus the Ramban, before we get to the Ramban. 5, Aleph, excuse me. Hakarov min hadvarim shene'em rubazeh. Excuse me. So the Ramban says, let me tell you what the essence of Moshe Rabbeinu's sin was. V'hu tov litchos ha-shoel. Heim divri Rabbeinu Chananel. So the first thing the Ramban does is he calls Rabbeinu Chananel. Shekasov. Ki achit hu, Amram, ha-min ha-sela ha-zeh notzi lachem mayim. So the Ramban understands, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, that what was Moshe Rabbeinu's sin? Look at Moshe Rabbeinu's verbiage. When he assembles the Jewish people, and he and Aaron are there, what do they say to the Jewish people? Haminasela hazeh, from this rock, what will happen? We will bring forth water. Haminasela hazeh, notzi lachem. We will bring forth water for you. Ve'ra'ui sheyomru yotzi Hashem lachem mayim. So Rabbeinu Chananel says that what Moshe Rabbeinu should have said was, from this rock, God will bring forth water from you. Instead, what Moshe says is, from this rock, we will bring forth water from you. Kederech sha'amru b'seis Hashem lochem ba'erev basar le'echol v'chein b'chol hanisim yodiyum ki Hashem aso imohem lahafli. So amazingly enough, the Ramban, quoting Rabbeinu Chananel, says that if you look, every single time that Moshe Rabbeinu brings about some type of miraculous event for the Jewish people, Moshe Rabbeinu is always very careful in appropriate attribution. He always makes sure to remind the people, this is God. This is God. V'ulai chashvu ha'am ki Moshe ve'aron b'chach masam hotzi lahem mayim min ha'sela hazeh. So says the Ramban, you know what their mistake was? Their mistake was that they could have led the people to believe that it was Moshe and Aaron that went ahead and brought about water from the rock. After all, again, it was Moshe Rabbeinu who keeps on clapping the rock over and over and over until it brings forth water. The verbiage he used, we will bring forth water from you. And therefore says the Ramban, v'zeu lo kidashtem osi. So says the Ramban, and this fits in very well with God's response to the Jewish people. Because remember, excuse me, to Moshe Aaron. Because what does Kadosh Baruch Hu say to Moshe Aaron? Ya'an, because lo he'emantem bi. Because you did not believe in me, right? What was the lashon there? Lo he'emantem bi, lahakdisheni le'nei b'nei Yisrael. There was an opportunity here for Kiddush Hashem. There was an opportunity here for the people to see that I, God, will always be the provider. But you, Moshe Aaron, deprived me of that opportunity. Mm-hmm. How did you deprive me of it? Mm-hmm. By taking the credit, or by creating the potential that people would understand that you are taking the credit, that you are responsible for bringing about this miraculous result and not me, God. So this is actually a very severe accusation. Then again, the Ramban is not suggesting that Moshe Rabbeinu did this intentionally. Moshe Rabbeinu, of course, didn't do it intentionally. Why would Moshe Rabbeinu want to take credit for a miracle that he wasn't performing? But nevertheless, that was the byproduct. That was the result. You know, an incredible lesson in and of itself, that sometimes in life, you are liable for the results, even if they're unintended. Right? Just because you didn't mean for something to happen, if at the end of the day you created this reality, then you are responsible for the fallout. You are responsible for the repercussions of that reality. Moshe, you chose your words. You said, we will bring forth water. I know you didn't mean to rob God of the miracle, but that effectively is what happened. Now, the Ramban in 5 Bays points out something very interesting. The Ramban says, now remember, this is not the first time that water is being brought forth from the rock, which of course also compounds the difficulty of the episode. Remember, Moshe Rabbeinu does bring forth, or God brings forth, water from the rock before. But remember, what happened the first time? What happened the first time? Moshe is commanded that time to hit the rock. So the Ramban points out that there is a big distinction between the two episodes. Look at 5 Bays. Umasa harishon bitzor. The first time they brought water forth from the rock, Amar, Hineni omed lifanecha sham alatzor b'chorib. The difference in that case, interestingly enough, is that in the first case of the rock, the cloud representing the Shekhinah was right there above the rock. God's presence was clear and observable. Because of that, it was undeniable that the miracle was being brought about because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the Ramban posits that in this particular circumstance, there's no cloud, the Shekhinah is not visible in a tangible fashion by the rock. Couple that with the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu uses this verbiage that makes it sound like he and Aaron are performing the miracle, and says the Ramban, that's the sin, that's the mistake of Moshe Rabbeinu, taking credit for a miracle that really should have been attributed to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Now again, I want to be clear. This is not God being petty, saying, hey, you're taking credit for my miracle. You have to understand something, that the Jewish people at this stage of our national existence were, we'll call it theologically and philosophically immature, right? Meaning that Moshe Rabbeinu tried to teach them, but they could not absorb the teachings. The only way to potentially get through to them was how? Was by showing them things. Water represents the ultimate sustenance. To go ahead and give 3.5 million people plus their flocks water is the ultimate demonstration of the Ribono Shel Olam as the provider. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, you made me, God, lose out on an incredible opportunity to bolster my relationship with the fledgling Jewish people. I need them to view me as a provider. Because the truth is, as we know, viewing God as the provider is the ultimate foundation stone in our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Creating dependency on God, which is the result of recognizing that God is the provider, is the building blocks of our relationship with Hashem. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, you, Moshe, by attributing, by taking credit for the miracle for yourself, albeit unintentionally, deprived me and the people of an opportunity to build and to bolster our relationship. And Moshe Rabbeinu, yes, that is an unforgivable offense. So that's the Ramban. Take a look at number 6, second approach. Now again, still the Ramban, but this time the Ramban's quoting the Rambam that I mentioned before. So 6 Aleph. V'harav Rabbi Moshe, Savar bo Svar. So now he quotes the Rambam. What does the Rambam say? And this is amazing. Also a very well-known idea. V'amar, ki Moshe Rabbeinu alav ha-shalom, chet ohu, shenata litzad harag zonos. So says the Rambam, what was Moshe Rabbeinu's mistake? What was his mistake? He got angry. Va'amar ki Moshe Rabbeinu alav ha-shalom chet ohu shenata fine. Va'amru, now where do you say that Moshe Rabbeinu got angry? Because he says, shimu na hamorim. Right? Listen, you rebellious ones. Now, the truth is, we, the reader, very much empathize with Moshe Rabbeinu and say, wow, Moshe, that's actually pretty nice, because if I were you, I'd really give them a piece of my mind. But you'll see why this is important in just a moment. Moshe Rabbeinu gets angry with them. He calls them rebellious ones. So what happens? Diktek alav Hashem Yisbaruch, HaKadosh Baruch Hu got very upset with Moshe, or was medaktek, was very exacting with Moshe. Sheyehye Adam Kamohu Koes Lifnei Adas Bnei Yisrael B'makom She'en Ro'i Bo Hakas. So the Rambam here says something amazing. It's not necessarily that Moshe got angry, because the truth is, there are times anger is a very important midah. It's very important to have anger. You just have to know, because remember, if you don't, a lack of anger is what? Total lack of anger is apathy, right? So total a person always has to have anger, because when should you get angry? Well, if you're a principled person and you stand for things and you see things that are an affront to your principles, to your ideals, that should make you upset. How you react to that, of course, is a different discussion. But the Ramban says something amazing. The Ramban says it's not the pshat that Moshe got angry. It's that Moshe got angry in a situation where anger was not warranted or appropriate. Now, the Ramban goes on. He says, "V'chol ki yotze baze," and any situation like this, "bedina ishahu chilul Hashem," and to get angry in a circumstance where anger was not warranted, that's a chilul Hashem. Now, interestingly enough, why isn't anger warranted here? Saj, I meant to put this on the sheet. I apologize that I didn't. There's another interesting example of this. If you remember back in Bereishis, when Rachel Imenu approaches Yaakov, and remember, everybody else is giving birth. Right, Leah's giving birth, and Bilah's giving birth, and Rachel Imenu approaches Yaakov, and she says, "Havali banim, give me children. Vim ayin, and if you don't, mesa anochi. I'm like, I'm dead." And Yaakov Avinu responds to her in a very sharp way. Yaakov Avinu says, "Hatachas elokimani, am I God? Kimaniti mimeich pribaten," right? Did I withhold children from you? And Yaakov Avinu essentially says to her, "Listen, it's your problem. It's not mine. I have kids." And the Gemara says, Medrash also quotes, "V'chi kach medarbin alamakios." Is this how you speak to a barren woman? Meaning, what Yaakov was saying is, sometimes life we have this where people come to us and they want something, and we say to ourselves, like, "What do you want from me? I can't help you with that." But there is a way to respond. There's a way to talk. There's a way to conduct yourself. And in fact, Yaakov Avinu, there's negative fallout for him as a result of that episode as well. So the Ramban says over here, Moshe, anger is warranted. Anger was not warranted here. Why not? And here's what's interesting. Because this is actually one of the few times, as I mentioned before, that the complaint was legitimate. Why was the complaint legitimate? Because it's water. You know, when the Jewish people say we don't like the man and we want, filet mignon, so that's not legitimate. That's inappropriate. But to go out and be in the middle of the desert and to say we don't have water and to get panicked about not having water, says the Rambam, that's actually quite legitimate. And Moshe Rabbeinu, keep it together. Because you have no right, you had rights to get angry at them earlier, but you have no right to get angry at them about this. Because this is a legitimate cause to panic. Again, if they were more theologically or philosophically mature, where they believe in God as the provider and not get panicked, yes, but they're not holding there yet. So Moshe, it was therefore inappropriate for you to get angry. Now, it doesn't stop there. Continue in 6. He says, V'chol ki yotzi bazeh bedinash, I'm in the third line in, mifnei, fourth line in now, shemitnu osav kulam umedvarav hayu lemedin v'hayu mekavin bahen, mekavin lagia bahen, el hatzlochos ha'olam hazeh v'olam haba. The Rambam here says something absolutely amazing. He says, Moshe, you're not just the leader. You're the role model. You're the role model. And when the people try to assemble for themselves the appropriate behaviors that create the composite identity of a successful Jew, who are they going to model themselves after? After you, Moshe Rabbeinu. So for you to go ahead and get upset, for you to lose your temper, for you to get angry where anger wasn't warranted, you know what you did? You didn't just fail me. You failed the people. Because the people look to you for behavioral guidance. The people look to you for behavioral modeling. The people look to try to model, even though you wouldn't know this from the story, because they don't seem to look up to Moshe Rabbeinu all that much, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that deep down they do. And when you exhibit negative behavior, it's not just a failure for you as an individual, it's a failure in your role as a teacher of the general populace. He goes on, Ve'ech yiro alav akas. How can you get angry? Ve'hu min ha'pu'ulos haros. Anger, you know, it's interesting. The Rambam in Hilchos Deos writes that a person has to have a little bit of every midah. Every midah. The Rambam suggests, however, maybe just one midah you should try to eradicate in totality. The Rambam says, and that's anger. Now, that's not totally true because, again, remember, there is another midah, like a sister midah to anger called kanos, which is, we loosely translate as zealotry. But the point that Rambam is making is anger. I didn't put it on the sheet, but the Gemara also talks about, the Gemara says incredible statements like, that when you get angry, it's as if you worshipped idolatry. What's the logic behind that? I mean, Baruch Hashem, no one here would know because no one gets angry. But we've heard that there are some people who get angry, and you know that anger could be such a blinding emotion. When you, that's why sometimes when a person gets angry, they say things that when they calm down, they wonder to themselves, like, I can't believe that even came out of my mouth. I can't believe I actually said that. And the truth is, to a certain degree, it's almost like we become a different person. That's what the Gemara says, that when you're angry, you could lose so much control that you could literally come to worship idolatry. We think to ourselves, of course, we'd never worship idolatry. That's because we're in control of our self. But get angry, lose control of that self, and who knows what a person could do. So the Rambam says, Moshe Rabbeinu, you engaged in one of the most terrible self-destructive midos at a time that it wasn't warranted. It's a failure in you as an individual, but worse than that, is that you failed in your charge to be a behavioral teacher to the Jewish people. He says, V'chol ma sheyomar o yasi efchanu, v'hine hitarnu safek misveke ha-Torah, shnenu bo dvarim rabim, v'nishal pamaram eza ze chet chata. So the Rambam says, and now I've resolved the question that everyone has, because everyone always wants to know what was the sin of Moshe Rabbeinu, and now I finally told you, V'ra'a ma'sheneemar bo ma'she'amarnu bo anachnu, v'ha'emes yore darko. And the Rambam says, truth always lights the way, which is another way of saying that I believe that what I said is unequivocally true. So according to the Rambam then, the sin of Moshe Rabbeinu was anger. But I want to be clear, because many people know this idea, but you have, it's not just he got angry, it's that he got angry when it wasn't warranted. He got angry when it wasn't, because Moshe Rabbeinu gets angry other times. Moshe Rabbeinu threw down the luchos. That's pretty stark, right? I'm saying that's pretty intense. So it's not the pshat that it's anger. It's unwarranted anger. It's inappropriate anger. It's misplaced anger. And because of that, Moshe Rabbeinu, you prevented the people from learning, or I should say differently, you've given the people flawed chinuch. Now, interestingly enough, if you look at six bays, so remember, this is the Ramban, Nachmanides, quoting the Rambam, Maimonides. Now, after the Ramban quotes the Rambam, he says something amazing. Six bays, V'hosif hevel al havolim. So the Ramban says, Rambam, thanks, but that's absolutely ridiculous. He mildly disagrees with the Rambam, right? That's ridiculous. Sha'kosuv omar merisem pi, Sha'avru al divaro. So what the Ramban just is bothered by is that the Rambam's interpretation of Moshe Rabbeinu's sin does not seem to fit with the verbal rebuke of God. Because God says to Moshe, you have rebelled against me, you violated my word. V'amar lo ha'emantem bi, you have not believed in me. Shelo ha'eminu bo, that literally what God seems to be saying to Moshe is you didn't believe in me. Ein ha'onesh ba'avor shekas. So remember, what did the Ramban say in number 5? I gave you this a little bit out of order. The Ramban himself says in number 5 that what was the sin of Moshe Rabbeinu? That Moshe Rabbeinu inadvertently took credit for the miracle himself, thereby depriving the people of an opportunity to bolster and reinforce their belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ramban says, that's what the Pasuk is saying. God says to Moshe, you rebelled against me. You took my miracle and unintentionally made it your own. You failed to sanctify me in the eyes of the people. The people could have looked to me as a provider. Says the Ramban, Where do you see anything about anger in there? Where do you see anything about Moshe Rabbeinu's failure as a teacher? So the Ramban disagrees with the Rambam because he doesn't feel that the Rambam's approach is true to the text. Nevertheless, we're going to look at them still as both viable approaches. So again, we have the Ramban saying the sin of Moshe Rabbeinu is that Moshe hijacked the miracle unintentionally and attributed it to himself, as opposed to giving it to God and using it as an opportunity to bolster the Jewish people-God relationship. Rambam, his mistake is that he got angry. And not just angry, it's unwarranted anger, inappropriate anger, failure to teach them in what could have been a teachable moment. Look at number 7. The Maral gives a different approach. Yes?
It says Ramban on 5 and Ramban on 6, is that correct?
Yeah, they're both Ramban. It's the Ramban quoting the Rambam. 6 Aleph, Vaharav Rabbi Moshe.
Thank you.
7, the Maral, third approach. So the Maral in his Gur Aryeh says something absolutely amazing. The Maral says, Amnam kasher teida ha'emes, ki shnei ha'chatoim, ma sha'amar shimun ha'morin, v'chei ma shehika es ha'sala pa'amayim, ha'kol chet echot. So the Ramban says, number 7, the Gur Aryeh says, that, and I put a little bit of, there's a biography about the Gur Aryeh, the Maral of Prague, on the next page. You can see that afterwards. So the Maral says, there's one big mistake that's occurring over here, right? The mistake of ultimately calling the Jewish people rebellious ones and hitting the rock, the Maral suggests, is all two parts of one big mistake. So what happened? And this is quite amazing. He says, Ubibnei Sherabim Nivochim Beferish in Yonzeh. So here's what's interesting. If you notice, everybody's using very strong wording. The Maral says, everyone makes huge mistakes when trying to analyze the sin of Moshe Rabbeinu. So you notice how the wording is very strong, right? The Ramban, Nachmanides, says that the Rambam, Maimonides' words, are Hevel Havolim, right? They're nothingness. You have the Gur Aryeh saying that everybody's making serious mistakes, because you have to understand something. The stakes here are quite high. This is not just about interpreting a pasuk in Chumash. This is trying to understand what was the failure of the greatest prophet ever to live. This is major, major stuff. What the Mefarshim are saying is there's no room for error, because this is Moshe Rabbeinu we're talking about. And remember, the door is getting slammed shut on Moshe Rabbeinu's last remaining life dream. So whatever it is, it's got to be severe. So the Maral says again, everybody makes mistakes. I'm going to explain this to you. V'lo yodu la'amod alamita sachet. And no one knows how to analyze the true sin of Moshe Rabbeinu. Yesh lefar shachet hazeh. So the Maral says, I'm going to tell you what it was. Listen to this. Da. This is very quite profound. Ki achet shal Moshe v'aron, ki dichsiv bikra, ya'an, Asher lo ha'emantem lahakdisheni. So the first thing Maral says is, let's not try to move past the text. The text tells us what the sin of Moshe Rabbeinu was. God tells us what the sin of Moshe, what was the sin? You did not believe in me. God says it. You did not believe in me. So he says, V'dover zeh mashehiku pa'amayim el ha'sela, kasher na'asa lo ha'manes, Kizehu, look at the underlined lines of paragraph A. Kizehu yitzia min ha'emuna. The act of calling the Jewish people rebellious and hitting the rock twice was a departure from their faith. How so? Ki asu ma'asezeh derech kas. Because everything they did out of anger. Now, I want to be clear. The Maral is not agreeing with the Rambam. This is not about anger. You're going to see where anger goes in just a moment. Everything they did out of anger. And whoever does the mitzvahs of God in anger, bifrat kasher naasal neis kazeh, kimo she'asu aneis she'amru shimon ha'amorim, v'chein shehiko el ha'sela, ein ze emuna. When you serve God, even if you bring about miraculous results, but you do it in a state of anger / emotional turmoil, that is not proper belief in God. What does that mean? Paragraph B. Ki ha'emuna hu mi shaboteach bo yisbarach. What does it mean to have emuna? Truth is, we all ask this question because we use this word very freely of emuna, belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does emuna mean? And truth, maybe the better question is, how do you know if you really have it? How do I know if I really have emunah? See, he says, this is so profound. Ein lo bo, rak simcha. Shezeh inyan emunah. So the Maharal says, you want to know if you, how do you know if you have emunah? If you always find yourself in a state of simcha. Now I want to be clear on something. Don't shake your head just yet. Right? Simcha doesn't mean happiness. Simcha means tranquility. Tranquility, inner quietude, life equilibrium. That's simcha. Meaning, this is different than, let's say, when Rabbi Nachman says, you know, mitzvah gedola lios besimcha. Tamid Rabbi Nachman was talking about a different form of elation. That's not what the Maharal is talking about over here. The Maharal is saying that the if one truly has emunah, then one is in a state of almost emotional equilibrium, harmony, inner quietude, tranquility. He says, why? Very simply, shema min bo uboteach bo. Because what does emunah mean? See, that's the litmus test if you are a ma'amin. But what does emunah mean? What does emunah mean? All right, belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But what does that mean on a deeper level? Everything comes from him, and therefore by definition, everything has a resolution from him. Right? Everything will be resolved by the Ribono Shel Olam. If I truly believe, the person who truly believes that, ultimately lives life with a sense of simcha, sense of tranquility. Again, it doesn't mean that everything is okay. It doesn't mean that everything is wonderful. It doesn't mean that they walk around with a big smile, you know, on their face, clicking their heels. But what it means is I have a certain sense of tranquility because I know that the Ribono Shel Olam is behind the wheel. The Ribono Shel is orchestrating the events of life. And even though sometimes I feel like it's totally out of control, sometimes I feel like I can't get the ship in the right direction, I'm to a certain degree okay with that because I know God is the ultimate life choreographer. He goes on. V'ima bitachon asimcha. So therefore, with true bitachon, with true belief, comes this state of life serenity with the Maharal calls simcha. Avali makas ein kan emunah. But where there is anger, says the Maharal, there is no emunah. U'mashehiku pa'amayim yorezeh amiyot ha'emunah u'bitachon bo. So the Maharal says something absolutely amazing. He says, you know what the sin of Moshe was? That Moshe Rabbeinu had a golden opportunity. And what was the golden opportunity? A teachable moment to teach the people that true belief in God endows and instills one with a sense of tranquility. That if you truly just put your trust in the Ribono Shel Olam, it gives you a sense of life peace. It does, again, I want to be clear, I'm not trying to sell anyone on something that might not be totally true. It doesn't mean everything works out okay or to your liking. It doesn't mean that you're going to be happy with every single result. But ultimately, what it means is that if I put my trust in the Ribono, it gives me tranquility. Moshe Rabbeinu, the people are complaining, the people want water, the people are flying off the handle. You have a teachable moment. Use the opportunity to teach them that when you have emunah, you could approach even what would appear to be the most dire circumstance with quietude and tranquility. And that's why, by the way, interestingly enough, going back to what you mentioned before, that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him to take the staff. Because what does the staff represent? The staff represents force. And Moshe is going to hold that staff in his hand, but what? He's not going to use it. Instead, what is he going to do? He's going to very kindly, he's going to say please, he's going to say thank you, he's going to write to the rock, and he's going to, in a very quiet voice, he's going to ask the rock to bring forth water, and amazingly enough, what's going to happen? The rock is going to comply. The Maharal goes on, he says, the davar zeh yadua, last three lines of paragraph B, the davar zeh yadua, ki mi she'eino ma'amin ubotech bo yisbach bitachon gamar, and this we know, that someone who does not fully believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who have a full sense of bitachon or emunah, who because such a person is always in a, not always, but such a person often finds themselves in a state of anger and machovos, pain. Paragraph C. V'hine shnei hadvarim ha'echad, mashamar shimun ha'amorim, u'mashihiku b'tzor pa'amayim, ha'kol hefech ha'emunah. So it says in paragraph B, now you understand, calling them, yelling at them, calling them rebellious ones, hitting the rock repeatedly is the same thing. It's getting angry. But unlike the Rambam, who understands that the anger is the sin, the Maharal says, no, no, no. It's what the anger represents. The anger represents lack of tranquility, lack of quietude, lack of stability. And it's that lack that represents a hole in one's emuna. L'kach tinsa pa'mayim omrim razal, shachet ma'shehi katzur. Fine. So now you have over here a real common denominator between the Ramban, the Ramban himself, and the Gur Aryeh, or I should say, the Rambam and the Maharal. Both the Rambam and the Maharal agree that the failure of Moshe Rabbeinu was he had an incredible opportunity to teach. Let me say it differently. The fundamental dispute among the commentaries so far is everyone agrees that Moshe Rabbeinu lost out or caused the loss of an opportunity. The question is, whose opportunity? So you have again the Ramban, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, who says it was a lost opportunity for God. Moshe Rabbeinu inadvertently attributes the miracle to, takes credit for the miracle, thereby depriving the Jewish people of an opportunity to look at God as a provider. It's a lost opportunity for relationship building between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. But comes along the Rambam and the Gur Aryeh and say, no, it wasn't a lost moment for God, it was the lost teaching moment for Moshe Rabbeinu. According to the Rambam, he could have taught them proper behavioral modeling by not getting angry. See, interestingly enough, according to the Rambam, Moshe Rabbeinu's failure is that he was supposed to teach them what not to do. What not to do. Don't get angry under these circumstances because anger is not warranted. You failed them as a teacher. The Gur Aryeh says it's much more profound. And by the way, the beauty of the Gur Aryeh is that it fits very beautifully into the text. Because what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say to Moshe Rabbeinu? Ya'an. You don't believe in me. And almost when you read it this way, there's almost a certain sense of hurt in the voice of the Ribono Shel Olam. I thought we were tight. I thought we were together. I thought we had a relationship. Moshe, if there's one person who should know that I have your back, and I've got you taken care of, it's you. You who spent 40 days up on a mountain with me, with no food and no drink, and you know I took care of you. You have to be the one who has the opportunity to teach people that true emuna instills a sense of life tranquility and profound calm. And when you fly off the handle at the people and at the rock, you prevented the people from seeing the greatest aspect of emuna, the greatest byproduct of having real belief in the Ribono Shel Olam, is a sense of life tranquility. You don't always have to have your kishkas in a knot. Instead, you accept the fact that there are certain realities that you can't control, but you rejoice in the fact that the Ribono Shel Olam does. And when I accept that reality, that almost like an air of calm settles on me. Moshe, you had the opportunity to teach the Jewish people that. You failed, and because you failed, you not only failed them, Moshe, you failed in your own emuna. Yes?
So Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have bitachon?
Of course he had bitachon, but even great people have a lapse in bitachon. That's the Maharal is saying. Moshe Rabbeinu has a lapse. That moment he lapsed, which I want to tell you, I don't think is in any way derogatory Moshe Rabbeinu. It just highlights that Moshe Rabbeinu is a person. Yes.
So I have a very similar question here. But where does that leave us? Like, if Moshe Rabbeinu of all people like slipped, then how could any of us possibly have something close to true emuna? So no.
Just because you slip, it doesn't mean you don't have true emuna. Meaning, because you slip means you're a human being. True emuna, nothing that we do is absolute. Right? I don't speak Lashon Hara except when I do. Right? It's just some meaning, but just because even when I do, it doesn't mean that I don't value not speak. I made a mistake. Okay, take a look. One more approach. Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Berdichev. So the Rebbe goes in a dramatically different. So again, let's just review for a moment what we have until now, because again, and now you understand also why the Mefarshim get so heated with each other, because it feels awkward to us speaking about Moshe Rabbeinu in these terms because he's Moshe Rabbeinu. On the other hand, there's one uncontestable reality, which is there's some dramatic mistake that was made, and it's so dramatic that it denies him the future that he so desperately wanted. So again, remember, right now, the Mefarshim are pretty much divided up into two camps. Everyone's agreeing that it's a missed opportunity. That was the sin. The Shaila is missed opportunity for. So again, Ramban goes at the approach of Moshe Rabbeinu caused God to miss out on an opportunity. This was an opportunity to rebuild the relationship or to bolster the relationship with Kadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu takes inadvertently attributes the miracle to himself, causes a loss of that opportunity to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Rambam and the Maharal understand that it was Moshe Rabbeinu's failure as a teacher. According to the Rambam, Moshe Rabbeinu got angry when he should not have gotten angry. It wasn't warranted. It wasn't appropriate. The people, you are not just the leader, but you are the teacher. The people learn proper midos from you. When you get angry in these unwarranted circumstances, they will think such behavior is acceptable. And that, of course, is a major, major catastrophe. Maharal, Moshe Rabbeinu had an opportunity to teach them Emunah 101. And Emunah 101 is that true Emunah, true bitachon, instills within the individual a sense of tranquility. When you get angry, when you get upset, they see and I see that in this moment, you are not acting with true Emunah. You have the opportunity to teach them that no matter how stressful life becomes, real Emunah keeps you settled and anchored. And essentially, Moshe, you just followed their example instead of getting them to follow you. They flew off the handle, they got upset, they lost their head. You did the same exact thing. Which now brings us to number 8. So writes Rabbi Yitzhak Aberdichev, an incredible, incredible insight. He says, 8a, V'dibartem al aseh le'nehem, yan lo ematem, so go to the third line. Hini Rashi v'Ramban cholkim v'cheit shal Moshe. See, quotes Rashi and Ramban, echad mefarish al shamar li'yisrael shemuna amorim, ve'echad mefarish al shehika es aseh. Fine. So we didn't quote Rashi because Rashi is the obvious pshat, which we mentioned outside, we just didn't attribute it to Rashi, which was that Moshe Rabbeinu's sin is hitting the rock. That's fine, we understand that, but we're looking for something a little bit deeper. But the Rebbe suggests an incredible idea. Vahanira, shetam echatu, kizeh gorem zeh. So the Rebbe wants to suggest that calling the Jewish people rebellious by definition led to the hitting of the rock. How so? He says, Vihine yesh shnei bechinos. So remember, I want to be clear. This is different than the Gur Aryeh, because the Maharal suggested that he also said that calling them rebellious and hitting the rock were indicative of the same caste, which represents a lack of Emunah. Rabbi Levi Yitzchak is saying something different. Rabbi Levi Yitzchak is saying, once you called them rebellious, then what was going to happen? It kind of created a trajectory of events. And by definition, after calling them that name, it was only inevitably going to lead to hitting of the rock. Why? Listen to this. V'hanira shetam echatu, kizei garam zeh. V'hine, yesh shnei bechinos, b'mochiach. Shemochiach es Yisrael, sheyasu ritzon habori baruch hu. There are two different ways. Now, the Rebbe is phrasing this in one way, but we're going to look at it a little bit differently. He writes, there are two different ways that you could rebuke the Jewish people to get them to perform the will of God. Now, you don't have to, just to bring this down a little bit to our level, there are really two different ways that you could rebuke an individual to get them to do the right thing. There are two different ways. Number one, echad, shemochiach bedvarim tovim. One is to do it in a positive fashion. Dehainu, Sha'omer lekol Yisrael, shekol ish Yisrael, godol ma'aloso, umekom mekar machtsav nishmaso, asher be'emes Yisrael, nishmas Yisrael, chatsuva lemal mekes Yaakovet. So, approach number one is positive reinforcement. You tell a person how special they are, how good they are, how beautiful. The fact that each of us has a neshama that comes from where? That literally is carved out from underneath the throne of the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Godol Hanachas Ruach Asher La'Bor Yisparach Kivyachol Mimitzas Kolish Yisrael. And I remind the person how much nachos, how much joy and happiness HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets when I do what I'm supposed to do. The Godol HaSimcha Asher B'chol HaOlamos Ba'asos Ish Yisrael Mitzos HaBori Baruch Hu U'bozeh HaTochacha Mate es leiv bnei Yisrael la'asos ritzon habori b'derechu lekabel kol ish mi Yisrael ol malchus shemayim alav. Okay, so approach number one is when you want to go ahead. I encounter someone and I know they need to change. They need to change, right? It's not me. I don't need to change, but someone else needs to change, right? So now what happens? There are two ways. You could build the person up. You're so wonderful. You're so special. You know, like the Mishnah Pirkei Avos brings down that a person has to be mitamidav shel Aaron. Hillel says that a person should be of the students of Aaron. So the Mefarshim there explain that when Aaron used to go, when Aaron knew that someone did something wrong, what he would do is he would go out of his way to bump into the person, and he would compliment all of the incredible things that they were doing right. And the Gemara writes that when the person took leave of Aaron, the person would say, my gosh, now, Aaron HaKohen thinks so highly of me. if he really knew what I was, how disappointed he would be. But it was the positive reinforcement that Aaron gave to the individual that gave them the motivation to improve. So one way we push a person, we push a nation to get better is by showing how special, how wonderful, how significant, and how good they really are. Yes, there are parts that need improvement, there are flaws, there are faults, but that does not in any way detract from the incredible toll that the person has. But there's another way. End of paragraph A. V'yesh shemochiach es Yisrael bedvarim kashim ubedvarim biyushim ad shemuchrochim la'asot shana borim. And there's another way. The other way is that you could mamish, you know, blast someone. You could put them down. You could degrade them. You could highlight their shortcomings and make sure they're fully and acutely aware of all of their mistakes. You have to understand also, in the world of Musar, there are two different Musar movements. Right, there was in their Nirvaduk movement. So there were the two different ones were Shiflos HaAdam versus Gadlos HaAdam. How do you get a person to improve? Do you focus on the lowliness of man, or do you focus on the greatness of man? So the Yeshiva of Nirvaduk was famous for focusing on Shiflos HaAdam. It was all about I'm nothing, I'm nothing, I'm nothing, I'm nothing. You know, it's quite interesting that for some of these major philosophical debates, history proves the winner. You know, the Nirvaduk Musar movement has essentially died out, really after the war, it really never rebuilt itself. Why? For a simple reason. Because most people don't respond well to being told they're nothing, right? One of two things happens. Either people actually begin to think that they're nothing, and when you begin to think that you're a nothing, then what's the point of trying to be a something if I'm really a nothing? I'm never going to amount to anything. Or people say, you know what, I don't need this. And they totally check out because no one wants to be made to feel like a piece of dirt. So the Rebbe says there are two different ways you could try to build people up. You could build them up by focusing on the positive and trying to amplify the good and getting them to build on the good. Or you could highlight and magnify and put in their face all of the ways in which they are failing, all their faults. He goes on. Paragraph B. V'achiluk shebeneim. What's the fundamental difference between these two approaches? Zeh shemochiach es Yisrael betov, ma'ala es nishmas Yisrael, lemala lemala. So the one who goes ahead and ultimately, he calls it, rebukes the people with good, which it doesn't really sound like rebuke, but means that you build up the people by showing them how good they are, how wonderful they are, ma'ala es nishmas Yisrael lemala lemala, or misaper tamid betzidkas ubegdulas Yisrael, kama godol kocham lemala, v'roi hu lios manigal Yisrael, v'zeh shemochiach es Yisrael bedvarim kashim, ein lebebechina hazos. Fine. V'hinei zeh shemochiach es Yisrael betov, ומספר תמיד בגדולת ישראל בצדקתם, אז כל הדברים הנבראים בעולם צריכים לעשות מעצמם הרצון של ישראל לדבר שנבראו. דהיינו בשביל ישראל. So the Rebbe says something absolutely amazing. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu create the world? A fundamental question. Why did he create the world? So the simple, many answers, but the simple answer for tonight's purposes is to serve us. To serve us. That when HaKadosh Baruch created the world, what he said was, I'm going to give you the Torah, and I'm going to ask you to keep the precepts of my Torah, and I'm going to give you the physical world to help you in that pursuit. So amazingly enough, says the Rebbe, that when we do what we're supposed to do, then what happens? The world reacts to us in a certain way. Right? Because again, this is a shir by itself, but it's based on the idea of histakel ba'oraisu bara alma. God created the world with the Torah as the blueprint, which means that the tenets of the Torah themselves are programmed into the very blueprint of creation. So when I do something positive, it's not just that I've done something good for myself or even just for the Jewish people, that has an effect and an impact on nature. I have fundamentally changed the world, and the world will react to me in a particular way. That's why, interestingly enough, you notice very often throughout the Torah will say, if you serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's interesting because although we don't serve for the sake of receiving physical reward, and the truth is the Gemara says there is not even physical reward in this world, material reward in this world for mitzvahs. Reward for mitzvahs comes in the world to come. But yet so often, what do we find in the Torah? If you keep the mitzvahs, then what? Right? It's going to rain, you're going to have the livestock. So the way the Mefarshim understand it is, it's not a reward, it's a reaction. Because the world is programmed with the tenets of the Torah, when a person observes and performs and actualizes, nature reacts a certain way to me. He says, go to paragraph C. I'm sorry, last couple lines of paragraph B. Avalim eino misaper, umal etzit kas Yisrael. But if I don't try to improve people by building them up, instead, Instead, I go ahead and I beat them down and I remind them of their shortcomings and of their faults. As sarach lahachriach kol hanivra behechrich gadol la'asos mashenivra dahayu la'asos ritzon Yisrael. Shabbos says something amazing. So then, if I'm going ahead and telling people how terrible they are and all of their mistakes and all of their faults, then what does that mean about nature? Then nature is not going to react to us kindly as well. Which means that if you want to get something out of nature, what are you going to have to do? You're going to have to beat it out of nature in order to get it, because the world is not going to respond to you because you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. Paragraph C. V'hine Moshe Amar Bekan Shimuna Hamorim. So the Rebbe says something absolutely amazing. He says, the Jewish people made a mistake. And what was the mistake? The mistake they made was, once again, it's the same mistake over and over, they flew off the handle when faced with adversity. It was a major mistake. Moshe, you have a choice. What's the choice? The choice is, tell them how terrible they are, or remind them how special they are, and how this behavior that they're currently engaging in is not reflective of who they really are, and ultimately, who they want to be. Which form, which framework does Moshe Rabbeinu choose? He chooses to beat them down. In paragraph C, V'hine Moshe Amar Bekan Shimu Nahamorim. Moshe Rabbeinu says to Klal Yisrael, what does he do? He calls them, listen, you rebellious ones. Hochiach es Yisrael b'dvarim kashim. He rebukes the Jewish people with very strong language, very strong words. Ulekach, and now says, the Rebbe says something amazing. So it makes sense. Now the rest of the story falls into place. Because if Moshe Rabbeinu is telling them how terrible they are, if that's really what he's telling them, then what? Then what happens to the nature? What happens to nature when you don't do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks you to do? Nature doesn't respond to you the way that you want it. So what happens? After Moshe Rabbeinu goes in and tells them, Shimu Nahamorim, what happens? The water is not coming out of the rock. Of course the water's not coming out of the rock. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu, you're telling the people that they are in defiance of the will of God. When you're in defiance of the will of God, the world does not react kindly to you. So what does Moshe Rabbeinu have to do to get the water? He has to strike the rock, and amazingly enough, not just once, but twice. So the Rebbe here introduces something absolutely amazing. That here, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling to Moshe Rabbeinu when he says, Ya'an lo ha'emantem bi lahakdishini le'enei b'nei Yisrael. What happens, you know, when you have a little child and the parent has to discipline the child? So what's the first thing the child says?
You don't love me.
Oh yeah, I was going to say you hate me. Right? Good. You don't love me. Right? Because the natural infantile reaction when the parent has to give a patch is, you don't love me. Kadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, you don't understand. I patch them. And I patched them pretty hard, and a couple of times over the last couple of parashot. So remember, understand what we're coming off of over here. Right? So we came off of the sin of the spies. Everybody's going to die. There's no way to sugarcoat that. Everyone is going to die. Everyone over 20 is going to die in the desert, and it's going to be a slow death over 40 years. Then Korach is swallowed up. Korach was a person of prominence. 250 people swallowed up. Then a plague that wipes out. It's patch after patch after patch. After a while, a person begins to think in themselves, I'm getting patched so many times, then what? You know, what happens? What happens? Rule number one in disciplining your children is, you never tell a child that they're bad. A child is not bad. Chasam, a child is good. The child might have done something bad, but the child is never bad. But what happens? After enough time of getting patched, the child begins to think that what? That I'm bad. Right? So many behavioral problems begin with children because no one ever tells them, I know you're getting punched a lot, but I still think you're good. You're a wonderful child, but you're not doing the right thing. Correct? I love you. I believe in you. You're wonderful. But get your behavior together. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, you had such an incredible opportunity. They feel so beaten down. They feel so oppressed. They feel so punished. They feel bad. Moshe, remind them that they're good. Lift them up. Tell them how special they are. These are the grandchildren of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. These are the grandchildren of the Avos and the Imos. Remind them of, because I know that they've forgotten that they're special. Moshe, lift them up. But Moshe, you didn't lift them up. Instead, what should you do? What did you do? You just pushed them down even more. And what did you accomplish? Ya'an lo ha'emantem bi. Do you think that helps their emuna in me? do you think that makes them kadosh? By pushing them down, all you're doing is reinforcing what they already think about themselves. They already think that they're garnished. They already think that they're nothing. They already think that they're beyond salvation. They already think that they're just a bunch of sinners. And you have the opportunity just to remind them, yes, you guys are flying off the handle, and it's not right, and your behavior is not good, but you're wonderful. But you're incredible. But you're special. You have so much untapped potential, so many untapped abilities. Lift them up. And Moshe, you know what happens? When you lift them up, you know what's going to happen? The word is going to be flowing everywhere. Because when you lift them up and you make them feel good about themselves and they feel like they're doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, then nature will react in kind to them. But if you push them down, if you beat them down, if you make them feel worthless, then you'll have to beat the results out of nature as well. So according to the Rebbe, what's unfolding over here is something so incredibly profound. Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to teach not just the Jewish people a lesson, but like all the lessons of the Torah, an eternal lesson as well. That at the end of the day, whether dealing with others or whether we're dealing with ourselves, we get the greatest results through positive encouragement and positive thinking. Sometimes we come across people, and you know, there is a mitzvah, it's not a very pop, it's a little bit countercultural, because the culture that we live in is live and let live. You know, you do what you want, I'll do what I want, and as long as what you're doing doesn't, but that's not a Judaic idea, right? We have a concept in Judaism of hocheach tocheach es am yisecho. If somebody's doing something wrong, I have to know how to approach it, I have to know what to say and how to say it, but there is a mitzvah to go ahead and try to help the individual. Well, how do you help? What is the best way to become an enabler for change? And the Rebbe says, positive reinforcement. Build people up. When we want to change ourselves, you know why? The Rav Soloveitchik discusses this in his essays on Tshuva. The Rav says, do you know why most people don't change? Deep down, most people don't change. Because we don't really feel that we're salvageable. Because deep down, if you ask me, you know what? There's one thing I know that I do pretty well, and that's sinning. Right? Everything else, I'm not sure if I do it so well. Sin, I got that. I've nailed that down. I've become proficient in that. We don't really believe, says the Rav, that we're capable of becoming good, that we're capable of becoming great, that we're capable of becoming better of what we presently are. So whether it's dealing with others, whether dealing with ourselves, to beat ourselves down, tell ourselves how terrible we are, or to beat others down, is not the vehicle for improvement and change. Rather, the best way to uplift others and ourselves is positive reinforcement. A reminder that although we may be doing many things wrong, hopefully we're also doing many things right, and the incredible potential that lies within each of us. This is what Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to do for Klal Yisrael, and this ultimately was the opportunity that Moshe Rabbeinu missed. So to bring everything together, what comes out is we saw four different approaches tonight in understanding the sin of Moshe Rabbeinu. And of course, again, our goal is not to chas v'shalom in any way demean or diminish the standing of Moshe Rabbeinu, but it's for us to learn. Because the leader, the prophet, the unparalleled prophet of the Jewish people did something that was so damaging that it denied him entry into the land of Israel. We have to understand it so that we can, chas v'shalom, avoid making that same mistake as well. So our four approaches, again, our first, just quick review, so we have everything in order. Our first approach, again, was the Ramban, that Moshe Rabbeinu ultimately deprived the people of an opportunity to bolster their relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu by inadvertently taking credit for the miracle himself. Then the Rambam, the mistake of Moshe Rabbeinu was anger, unwarranted anger. Moshe, you are to be a beacon. You are to be a role model of behavior of proper midos. You got angry when it wasn't called for. That is an unforgivable trespass against me, God, and against the Jewish people. Maral, Moshe Rabbeinu had the opportunity to teach them the greatest byproduct of Emunah. The greatest byproduct of true Emunah and Bitachon is tranquility, is the ability to keep an even temperament, even in the most difficult of circumstances. When you lost your cool with them, again, I understand why, but when you did, you lost the opportunity to teach them the ultimate benefit of true and lasting Emunah and Bitachon. And Rabbi Yitzchak, Moshe, what they needed from you now was a hug, not a patch. What they needed from you now was to be lifted up and made them to feel special, unique, and good. And unfortunately, what you did is you pushed them further down. And because of that, A, you didn't accomplish anything, and potentially you set back their national maturation just that much more. The lesson we take from that is whether building ourselves or building others, always better to hug than to crush. Always better to lift up than to put down. Always better to remind ourselves and others of the beautiful positivity that is untapped than to always remind ourselves of the glaring shortcomings and faults. All right, we'll stop over here.
What is the schedule?
All right, so I'm not sure about that. Okay, it's gonna get emailed out in your session. Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Shani is unbelievable.
Thank you. She loved your class.
She is unbelievable.
Thank you. Thank you.
And Mazel Tov.
Thank you.
Rabbi, I've got two possible answers for the stick.
Oh, just see this off.